92.5.
Driving the Gold Coast home. The Rush Hour with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.
It's great to be here wherever I am. I always love it when I'm here. But I've never been here before. It's great to be back. I've been on the road doing comedy now for 10 years, so bear with me while I plaster on a fake smile and plow through this one more time.
I want to make a big deal of this because we've got a heap of cash to give away this afternoon. All of a sudden, our birthday game, which has honestly got to be the easiest game on the radio, has jackpotted up to $900, and we're going to be playing it for you fairly soon. This is the game where Margo has three celebrities and you only have to guess the birth year of one of the celebrities, and you're going to win $900. That's coming up pretty soon.
Look, I was told something the other day that I found, like, staggering. I couldn't believe that what I was being told was true. And it was, I met this woman the other day and she was telling me that her and her husband have been married for over 30 years. And in that time, he has never said, I love you.
Really?
Never. Never said, I love you in 30 years of marriage.
Maybe he shows it rather than saying
Well,
it.
Possibly, yes. But I couldn't fathom this because I tell Corey and he tells me that we love each other every day and sometimes more than once. Sometimes it's like that really meaningful, I love you, and it's, meaningful, and then other times it's the, you know, oh, I love you, babe, have a good day, and you just kind of say it at the end of a phone call or when you're saying goodbye, see you, have a good day, love you, you know, that sort of stuff. And then other times I make sure that I tell him that I love him.
Do you do it like married at first sight?
No, within the first week, okay. No. Right. But, so that was strange to me.
That's strange to me.
Because they're not in love. They love each other very much and they've built a marriage and a life over 30-odd years.
Can I tell
but
you?
But he's never said it.
I love you, yeah. I feel guilty about this, but it's just... I find it so hard to say. I don't find it hard to say to my daughter. I'm the same as you. Like, I would tell, say, Coralie, I love her, honestly, 100 times a day.
Yeah.
But every time I see her, I can't help it. And I actually tell my girlfriend as well. It feels so natural.
Natural.
It feels really natural and it feels right. But I honestly don't know that I've ever told my parents that I love them.
Really?
Yeah, and my mum tells me all the time. I honestly don't know if my old man's ever told me he loves me, but I know he does.
Yeah, is it a generational thing?
I don't know.
Dad is a little bit the same. Mm. Like, I always say, love you, Dad, you know, hope you're well, love you, and he's like, yeah, thanks, you know, you too. Like, he doesn't actually say, yes, I love you. I know that he loves me and he would do anything for me and he cares about me.
But
he just doesn't say it, and I don't know if maybe it's that sort of generational thing.
I'm just trying to think about it. Like, I love my brother more than I love myself. Like, we're identical twins and I just...
You live for each other.
But I would never have told Ashley I love him. Never.
Well, and now's your opportunity.
Well, and vice versa. I don't think. But I can see that it works.
With family, it's different.
It's different with your wife or your partner.
Your wife, like, in the early days, you know, when you're in that honeymoon phase and you're in love and it's, you know, all, you know, you're courting and dating and you're all really smitten and you get that butterfly feeling in your tummy, you know, like, I love you and I love spending time with you. Maybe it works for them, I don't know, but it seemed unimaginable to me that in 30 years, this man who loves her... Yeah, she says, oh, I love you. And that's why I say, what does he say back? And
what
he's like,
he?
That's nice, thanks, babe. Yeah, or just like walks off or whatever.
Really?
But, you know, she's over time, she's grown to just stop saying it because he knows that she loves him and she knows that he loves her, but he's just never said the words, I love you. Three little words.
Hey,
got him unstuck.
13, 27, 10. Maybe, Margo, there's a heap of people out there that have really happy, healthy...
Well, you've just proven me wrong. Like, I didn't think that... Because I know I've heard you say I love you, but to say, never say I love you to your brother or your mum or your dad, like...
Yeah, I know. I feel guilty about it. I mean, not so much my brother, but he knows it. But I feel guilty about it to my mother.
Yeah.
Because she says it all the time, but it's just an uncomfortable thing for me. Like, I've never said it back. Coralie tells me all the time.
Yes.
And it's unreal. As a parent, it's the greatest thing in the world to have your kid tell you that you love...
Especially when they say it just out of nowhere.
I'm going to start doing it, Margo.
Yeah, I think...
I'm going to break the cycle.
If you love somebody, you know, we have to, you know, celebrate love and tell people we love them and appreciate them. And I think that's just a way of saying, you know, I appreciate you and what you do for me. Like, especially your mum. You know, she's raised you. She's educated you. She's disciplined you. She's taught you. She's, you know, instilled values in you.
No, not so much.
You're listening to the Rush Hour Podcast with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.
Real quick, there's been some movement with regards to Valentine Holmes. The news broke earlier today that he's picked up some kind of deal with the New York Jets.
Good on him.
Which is just outstanding. They're my team too, Margo.
I really hope he makes it. You know, like, I hope it doesn't end up like a Jared Haynes scenario where he goes and then he comes back and he's a flop and all that sort of stuff and then he ends up getting in trouble. I really hope that he makes a good go of this and, you know, is successful over there because it's a huge thing.
Well, it'll be unreal. And to get into a franchise like the New York Jets, I've been to a New York Jets game and it's unreal. Like, every game's a complete sellout. Tickets are something like $700.
Nobody does sport better than in America. Like basketball, NFL, baseball, it doesn't matter what you go to, they just live and breathe it.
The experience at a Jets game is unreal. And to think that we could have Valentine Holmes out there playing for the New York Jets is just so exciting as a fan to be able to watch. But producer Jeremy is all over this story like spots on a grandmother.
And like a cheap suit.
What is the go, mate? What did you just find out?
The latest is that he's obviously only got a 4-game deal going on. If he doesn't get into the 53-man squad, he sits in the practice squad and only earns $130 US a year. That's $130,000 a year.
US, what's that, like, what? $300,000?
$7,500 a week. It's nothing.
And so what, but you said he has a get-out clause.
He has got a get-out clause. If he doesn't make the full squad, he has got an option. The NRL are going to register him back again. And there's
who will he play for?
Potentially going to the Cowboys for a mil a year.
Anyway, fingers crossed. Let's hope that he makes it to the New York Jets.
And it's a slight different pay grade, isn't it?
Well, that's why I admire him, because he's risked $1 million a year contract to go over there and chase an NFL dream. And I say all good luck to him, and let's hope that he makes a success of it. And it's going to be fun to watch regardless. Hey, I've just got to tell you a story, and I don't know if anyone's going through this at the moment or has been through this horrendous experience, but my family's going through it at the moment, and that is trying to organise a funeral. Not a lot of fun, obviously. It's not awful. It is. You deal with death and the death of someone that you love.
Trying to process your grief.
So I went through it a couple of years ago. The last family member of ours that passed away was my grandmother, and I was front and centre for that. So
You had a very close relationship with her, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a really close relationship with Granny, and I took a bit of a hands-on role with regards to the funeral organising.
So much to think of.
Margot, I'd never done it before.
I'd love to do it.
And I was talking to my cousin today, and my cousin's going through it because his dad passed away, my uncle. And
Uncle Eddie.
He was going through the process. And I was like, oh, mate, I can relate. I know what you're going through. And it's going to the, like, you've got to pick caskets and this sort of stuff. How's this for a scumbag salesman that we experienced when it came to Granny? Okay, I'm telling you, this guy.
They wouldn't take advantage of you while you're grieving, would they?
This scumbag, it was here on the coast. I'm with my old man. It's my old man and myself. And I won't name the joint, although I bloody should.
Name and shame.
We're sitting there in a room full of coffins, right, which is eerie to start with.
Yep.
And we're going through, and Dad and I know nothing about coffins, and we've got to pick one for Granny. Yep. And we go, mate, what's the difference between this one here for $1,000 and this one here for $25,000? Have a go what he said.
It'd be something about the wood and the mahogany and how it melts or fires down. What are they?
Yeah.
Rots in the ground, or if it...
Then he goes...
Disintegrates in the fire.
Exactly what he said. He said it's a difference in the quality of wood and the workmanship that's put it all together. It just really depends how much she meant to you.
Oh!
How much... Hey?
Kick in the guts.
So in other words, if you go for the $1,000 one...
She didn't mean enough.
Granny didn't mean much to you. If you go and drop 25 with old mate, Granny meant something.
What did you buy?
Honestly, can't remember. I honestly don't remember. I'll tell you exactly what we did. The old man and I looked at each other and we're just like, hey, is this guy serious? And we got up and walked out. We went to a different joint. How disgusting is that?
Yeah, so disgusting.
That's taking advantage of families when they're at their most vulnerable.
Most vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You're listening to the Rush Hour Podcast with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.
God, I tell you what, there'd be a lot of Gold Coasters trying to work out how they're going to fill their night in tonight.
They might actually have to communicate with their partners.
Yeah,
Luke.
Have to catch up with old what's his name, better known as your husband.
What's a face?
Because Married at First Sight is done and dusted. It's finished for the year. And
what a season finale it was.
It was a ratings bonanza. It got State of Origin type figures across the country. Honestly. It nearly outdid the State of Origin. It was nearly up around 3 million viewers across the country.
We're a nation of dum-dums.
I've got to tell you, I was a bit disappointed with it. I watched it. I'll put my hand up and say I watched it, but gee, it dragged on. And
I was disappointed they didn't show all of the couples. Like
I loved it.
Michael and Martha didn't get a start. Ning and Mark didn't get a start. Tamara and Mick didn't get a start.
If you were a bore, they just completely ignored you. And yeah. I dug that. But
Until Jules and Cam, they gave them a moment.
They laboured with a few of them a bit too long, and it was just like, yeah, whatever.
They were obviously trying to get a reaction, Luke.
But it was pretty funny. And then the best TV of all was saved for the after show, which nobody watches, and it goes to
Talking Married.
Yeah, no one watches it.
It's on Nine, honey. It's a different Nine, isn't it?
Yeah, and so afterwards there's Jess and Dan, who's the two couples where they basically exposed her hitting on every person at the dinner party, and then he was just sitting there, this guy Dan, who's a Gold Coaster, and he's going, God, what have I got myself into? I'm with this chick who swings it around like a Great Dane in the park.
And I loved that she still, even though the footage was in front of them and she was confronted with them, she still lied on the spot and tried to justify and excuse her behaviour. And Dan was sitting there going, but I'm watching it. This is what you've done and you've lied to me.
They had a fight on national TV. Have we got some of it?
Yeah, we've got the audio. Let's have a listen.
So yeah, I'm admitting it for Dan. I don't feel like I did, but you know, it's obviously what Dan wants to hear.
It's not what I want to hear.
It said, is what you want to hear.
You just said that you hit
on him. On national television.
Anyway, yeah, next question.
We're not having a fight on national television.
It was so uncomfortable.
So basically what she was saying is I'll admit to doing it, which was hitting on Nick at the dinner party.
Yep.
And then Nick didn't give her what she wanted and said, no, we're married. That's not what married people do. And then she went back into the dinner party, switched seats with Martha. So she positioned herself next to Dan and then hit on Dan. But she got what she wanted then.
I'm so glad this show's over. I've got to be honest with you. But I've got to tell you that there's nothing more uncomfortable than if you're having a fight with your missus or your partner in public, or if you're out to dinner with a couple who are fighting.
Or let alone on national television, Luke.
Have you been in that situation?
Yeah, Corey and I have had a bit of a public spat in front of people, and he gets super embarrassed, whereas I don't care. I'm just like in the moment, and if it's heated, I'm going to continue with it because I don't want to wait till later. I want to do it now.
Corey gets
really embarrassed, and he'll just walk away.
Yeah.
But we actually, Valentine's night dinner, we were sat in between two tables. One was a couple having a public dispute, and the other couple, she just took selfies of herself all night. So we were kind of stuck in between. It was really quite entertaining. Mm. You know, we were kind of like, we're supposed to be engaging in conversation here, but we were too busy watching what was happening around us.
You watch the fight and I'll watch the narcissist and we'll report back to each other afterwards. It's a romantic...
But it's so uncomfortable. Oh, Corey hates it because I'm Mrs. Busybody. I'm always prying on other people's business and trying to figure out their conversations. But yeah, this poor couple was having a bit of a domestic, and I was like, oh, of all nights, in public at a beautiful restaurant on Valentine's Day.
If you're having a public fight, it's just great entertainment for everybody else.
Have you had one?
I'm trying to think. I really don't think I have. I would never do it in public.
Corey and I sometimes just fight over the bread that we buy at the grocery store because we normally do groceries separately. But sometimes we go together and we do things very differently. And I buy one type of bread and he buys another. And I'm like, what would you buy that bread for? You should get this bread because of blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, you buy this bread because of blah, blah, blah. And people will be standing there shaking their heads going, they're fighting over bread again. It must be a Monday at Woolies.
Two control freaks never work, I always say.
You're listening to the Rush Hour podcast with Luke Bradnam and Marco Parker.
Can I tell you what an absolute imbecile I am?
Yeah, sure. I always delight in that.
Oh, I'm so dumb. And yesterday afternoon is a perfect example of how like, I get frustrated at the fact that I'm not that intelligent. And I have certain people in my life say, no, mate, you're actually really smart.
Well, yeah, don't be so hard on yourself, yeah, Luke.
But I am. I'm basically an imbecile. And here's a good example. Like, going through school, Margot, I was legitimately in every dumb class there was.
Was that by choice or just, you know, didn't try hard enough or lack of effort or just genetics?
I don't know. Probably all of the above, I would say. But in saying that, like, my general trivia is pretty good.
Was it because the average was so high? You went to one of those elitist schools here on the Gold Coast?
No, I went to TSS here on the Gold Coast and I was in every dumb class. And I went to Pyalba State School at Hervey Bay and I was in every dumb class.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, like, regardless of the company, I'm in the lower end of the spectrum.
Either way.
Right, but yesterday is a good example because I just don't dot my I's and cross my T's. I'm not thorough.
You're busy.
Yes, I'm busy.
And so you get forgetful and thoughtless
and
almost.
Busy is an important word because it's a mad dash for me in the afternoon. I have two full-time jobs. I've got our job here at Gold 92.5 and I'm also the weather guy for Channel 9.
And you run from here literally every afternoon when we finish on air. You dash out of the studio to get to your next gig.
So that I can go and do the weather on the TV. And it is a mad dash and it comes down like...
It's minutes.
30 seconds is an important amount of time.
Yes.
Yesterday afternoon, I go to do the mad dash from here so that I can make it to the weather cross. I can't find my car keys.
Oh, you forget them always, Luke. If it's not your car keys, it's your phone. You'll come into a meeting maybe two times a week and you'll be like, oh, I can't find my phone. Where's my phone? Okay. And you're fluffing about in your pockets, in your bag. You're like, I've left it downstairs. I was eating at Guzman Gomez. I've left it downstairs. And then you've got to run downstairs and I've got to ring it to try and figure out where it is. And if it's not your phone, it's you're like, where's my bloody keys? I've lost my keys. Has anyone seen my keys?
It's a good impression and it's spot on. Anyway, yesterday I can't find my car keys. We turn the studio upside down. We turn the office upside down here at Gold 92.5.
They couldn't find him anywhere.
Nobody. No work's getting done. The whole staff is looking for my car keys. What would you say? How long you reckon? Would you give me 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
10 minutes later, Margot goes...
No, hang on, wait. Yep. You're like, oh, I don't have time for this. I'm going to have to catch an Uber. I said, I can drop you if you need it and you can come back and get cut. No, I'm just going to catch an Uber. I've got to go. And out you dash.
Yep.
And I sort of calmly walk out behind you. And in a moment, I remembered seeing you come back in the office between our planning meeting and going on air. You ducked across to Woolies.
Yes.
And you had a Woolies bag. And I said, don't forget your Woolies bag. And you went, Margo, you're a genius. That's where my car keys are.
I had put my car keys in the Woolies shopping that I'd bought so I wouldn't forget to...
Take your shopping
take
home.
My shopping. What I did forget was that I had shopping and my car keys were in the bloody shopping. And that's why I was in every dumb class at school, Margo.
You're listening to the Rush Hour podcast with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.
I've sort of only paid a bit of a passing interest in this whole vegan controversy that's going on at the moment. But as I understand it, vegans protested at a few farms around...
Abattoirs and farms.
And the flip side, they're saying, oh, animal rights and that sort of stuff. And then the flip side of it is the farmers are going, well, hang on a second. We're trying to make a living and we've just gone through drought or we've just gone
flooding.
Through floods. And now all of a sudden we've got to deal with you lunatics.
Give us a break.
We can't win on any level. We're trying to feed the nation and you guys are making life difficult for us. And so I can actually see both sides of the story because I am an animal rights activist on some level.
Yeah, and I totally sit on the fence on this one. I mean, look, I applaud them because they stand for something and they're standing up for something, and instead of sitting around whinging about something, they're getting out there and they're, you know, having a go of it. But at the same time, you know, they're entering private property. It can be destructive. You know, like you said, the farmers just want to, you know, earn a living and have a fair go. And then they've got this sort of, you know, righteousness to contend against. But I respect the vegans on some level because they are committed. You know, like, not these vegetarians who are a bit flaky.
Vegetarians take it to a whole new level.
They come and go. Vegans commit, you know. It's no animal byproducts. So they don't eat eggs or drink milk or eat meat on any level, and they don't then wear leather. So it's any byproduct of an animal. So I like that they commit to something. Whereas these vegetarians, they're like, oh, I won't eat chicken, but I'll eat fish. And I'll have eggs, but I won't have bacon. And it's like, well, it all comes from animals.
I respect Look, I've loved said it for years on the radio here on the Gold Coast, where I say I wish I was evolved enough to be a vegetarian, and I've done it, Margo. I actually went to India and I learned about Gandhi. Went to India with no understanding of Gandhi, didn't know nothing about him.
And you mean
Gandhi, Margo. And when I came back,
Gandhi.
When I came back, I was vegetarian for 6 months.
You enlightened,
and yeah, I was on some level. And basically, Gandhi was like. Like, you know, just because you can conquer an animal, is all the more reason why you should put your arm around it and protect it rather than actually conquer it.
And then we'd be inundated with animals because they would continue to breed and not be culled on any level.
But anyway, well, I went vegetarian and I lasted 6 months. And
you had a good effort.
You know what broke
me? That's a good solid effort.
It was better than I expected, but I was a bit wishy-washy because I still ate seafood, but I didn't eat meat.
So isn't that a pescatarian?
Yeah, it was something like that.
So pescatarians are vegetarians but that eat fish.
That was me for 6 months. And then there's a new shop open down at near Harbour Town.
Mm-hmm.
There's a butcher that opened across the road there.
Yeah.
And I went waltzing through there. And there was a T-bone steak, and
had your name on it.
It was sitting in the butcher.
Like, eat me,
and
like,
I went, bugger it. And yep. I bought it, and once the gates...
Yeah. How good's a bit of steak, though?
Once the gate opened, Margo...
My fillet, medium.
Whatever I didn't eat in 6 months, I made up for in the next 2 weeks.
Yep.
Honestly.
Just give me all the meat.
I think I wiped out half the cattle population myself.
Yeah, because look...
I did more damage to cattle than drought. And it's true. And I had vegans protesting me. And I was like, hang on, last week I was one of you.
You're listening to the Rush Hour Podcast with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.
Before we go, I have a confession to make.
Right.
These are my confessions. Just when I thought I said all I can say, my shit on the
yes. She got one on the way. I have a confession to make.
So you're building it up. Better be a good confession.
Brixie's good with the audio this afternoon. I have been harbouring a dirty little secret, and I thought, you know, we're pretty good friends and we confide in each other and tell each other
guess
our
what this is?
Deepest, darkest secrets.
Can I guess what this is? Can I have a guess?
Sure.
Okay. Is there any chance? Okay.
No, we're not having a baby together.
No.
It came up negative.
Okay, can I guess what this dirty confession is? Because a couple of weeks ago, Margo did a really lovely thing for me. She gave me a Brisbane Broncos jersey.
Nothing to do with that.
Oh, I proudly hung the Brisbane Bronco jersey up in the studio. Someone stole it, and I thought you were about to confess that you're the person that stole it.
No, I didn't.
No, okay. All right. No, I don't know what
still,
it is.
We still led to believe that that's Spider.
Okay.
All but, right. You know, he's yet to come forward in this.
All right.
No, I've been harbouring a dirty little secret, and I feel guilty about it, and I feel like I've been harbouring it because I don't want to be judged, because I'm judging myself enough as it is, and I don't want, you know, the judgments of you or my husband or my friends and family, our audience, our listeners. I feel like
I'm going to judge you anyway.
To them. I feel like you may.
I will judge you.
But I was driving home the other night and I chose to go the long way around.
Right.
Because on the long way around, so happens to be a McDonald's. And I've been clean eating and trying to do really well at losing some weight over the last 2 months, and I faltered. And
what did you go for?
I had a cheeseburger.
That's not bad.
Shame. Shame.
Shame on Ronald.
Shame.
You know like when a gambling addict goes to the casino and blames the casino when he loses $40 million? He says, You shouldn't have allowed me to gamble.
Golden arches, they had me. They drew me in.
Sue Ronald.
I'd look down
your fault.
At it and I was like, I can't do this. And
you're a
I
victim.
Looked back at it and it said, eat me, Margo, eat me.
You're a victim.
And so I parked in the car park, I wound all the windows down, I turned the air conditioning vent off so the smell wouldn't circulate through the car.
Did
and
you really?
I ate into that cheeseburger. And it was so good. It was fresh. The bun was so fresh and squishy, and it just...
Shame on Ronald. Shame on Ronald.
It bounced back up, you know, the bun. It was so fresh.
Shame.
And the cheese was perfectly melted.
Good amount of sauce.
Oh, the perfect. And it just all came together.
That's
and
great.
I was like, I felt ashamed.
If you never feel good after it,
and
though,
I felt sick driving the whole way home because I had to discard of the evidence in the car park. I got rid of the rubbish because I was like, I can't tell my husband because he's been doing really well with, you know, eating well as well and intermittent
fasting.
Hiding
it from him.
And so I feel like I've cheated on him in our healthy eating.
Not only that, you cheated on him with a redhead called Ronald. I mean,
a ranger.
Yeah. I mean, Corey's got big shoes to fill, but Ronald's got even bigger shoes. Like, they're massive. Have you seen them? They're huge. Like size 27s. Well done for ironing up there, Margo. I'm proud of you.
I feel so much better now.
Yeah,
I feel like it's off my chest.
Yeah, good on you.
I feel good for it.
Tell you how hungry she was too. She ate the pickle and the wrapper.
And I hate pickles.
You ate the wrapper.
And the wrapper too.
Hey, well done for fessing up, Margo. Still want my Brisbane Bronco jersey back, Spider, if you can. Oblige, that would be fantastic. But we'll be back tomorrow afternoon from 3 for your local drive home right here at Gold 92.5. Copy them, bye.
Good night.
You're listening to the Rush Hour Podcast with Luke Bradnam and Margo Parker.